choose the Chashav Rabbanim here tonight. Good evening to all of you. I'd like to welcome and thank all of you here tonight who made the correct decision to become an active participant in the South Florida Jewish community. Special thanks to Mr. Stanley Weinstein, who was instrumental in bringing Rabbi Dr. Zvi Hirsch Weinreb to our community. And Yasher Koach to all the organizations and institutions who participated tonight. And I'll just take a few moments to read them. Abba's Torah, Beis Menachem, Beit David Highland Lakes, Bethel Congregation, Captain Hyman, P. Galba Jewish Learning Center, Chever Shas of Tara 41, Congregation Or Chaim, Congregation Zichron Naftali, the Greater Miami Jewish Federation, Miami Beach Community Kollel, Ohev Shalom Congregation, the Rabbi Alexander S. Gross Hebrew Academy, Shaarei Tefillah Congregation, Talmudic University of Florida, the Shul, Temple Moses, Yeshiva Torahs Chaim, Torahs MS, Young Israel of Bell Harbor, and Young Israel of Greater Miami. And of course, a super duper Yasher Koach and thank you to Rabbi Dr. Zvi Hirsch Weinreb, who along with his professional staff, juggled his calendar to ensure he would be with us this evening. A talented teacher, writer, and orator, Rabbi Dr. Zvi Hirsch Weinreb is currently the Executive Vice President Emeritus of the Orthodox Union. In this position, he serves as Senior Advisor to the lay and professional leadership of the Orthodox Union, develops educational programming for its website, and consults for its various publications. He acts as ambassador for the organization, traveling to synagogues and communities across America, and representing the Orthodox Union at conferences and forums all over the world. Rabbi Weinreb is also the editor-in-chief of the Koren Talmud Bavli and the Rabbi Emeritus of Congregation Shomrei Emunah in Baltimore, Maryland. Ladies and gentlemen, Rabbi Dr. Zvi Hirsch Weinreb.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lefkowitz. The program for this evening, I'll make a few remarks. Then we'll say some Tehillim and a special Mishavera for the Chayalim, for the soldiers of Tzahal. I have a little bag on the seat there, several hundred cards, business cards with the tefillah, the prayer for the soldiers printed there, which we can distribute when I finish my talk, and then we'll go on to Davin Minchat Maariv. I think it's almost exactly 2 weeks ago that we learned of the discovery of the bodies of the three boys, Bayal, Naftali, and Gilad. And in the 2 weeks, it's just been 2 weeks, very, very much has happened and is still happening. And exactly where it's all heading, we certainly don't know. It seems to be almost unpredictable. I'd like to share with you some of my own experiences in the past 2 weeks and some of my own thoughts. The topics to discuss are numerous, and I will deliberately not address military issues, political issues, etc. Instead, focus on what you might call the spiritual aspects of the situation that we find ourselves in as of this moment. When I say as of this moment, all of us, I'm sure, as I am too, are in constant touch with the news, whatever media we consult. As of this moment, means knows what's happened just in the past minutes as we're sitting here. That's how unpredictable and volatile the situation is. As I was driving actually from Baltimore the previous night, 2 weeks ago last night, I had the great privilege of addressing a very large assembly in honor of the 20th Yahrzeit of Lubavitcher Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. And my wife and I were driving back from Baltimore to New York, and we heard the news discovery of the bodies. And immediately I received a call from Mr. Alan Fagan, who's now the Executive Vice President of the OU, and he said that he felt very strongly that someone had to go to visit the three families, to offer nichumim, to offer words of comfort and consolation to them on behalf of the Orthodox Union and the hundreds of synagogues that are associated with us and American Jewry in general. And he asked me if I would do so. I had a speaking engagement that Tuesday night, Passaic. I spoke. It was very widely received. You can read that talk. You can see that talk on the OU website. I entitled it, "Were Our Tears Shed in Vain, Part 1. Because I knew that later that night I was flying to Eretz Yisrael, flying to Israel. And I had the opportunity and the experience of visiting the three families and then returning to the United States to speak again in Edison, New Jersey. Again, website OU, but this time called "Were Our Tears Shed in Vain, Part 2. This evening, history has moved another week ahead, we hope, upwards and onwards. And the talk I'll give tonight will be a little different from those previous two because the situation has changed. But it will still be based upon the great zechus, the great privilege I had barely over a week ago to visit with the three families. I could not make it in time for the funeral, but I did stand at the grave of the three young men in Modi'in. And the experience was a very, very powerful one. We came to the three communities. In each community, we were met by the Rav of the community or the Rav of the family in that community, who gave us some words of background and introduced us to the mother, father of the boys. And these are remarkable, remarkable people. We've read about them, about their heroism, their nobility, dignity, and of course the great, great pain, the unbearable pain that they all have suffered. I would like to use tonight some of the impressions that the three mothers made upon me personally, especially the three mothers, but the three fathers as well, and some of the siblings as well, in order to come to grips with the situation as it is now. When I was in Israel, there were no rockets flying yet, even though it was just barely 10 days ago. First of all, in two of the three Batei Avel, two of the three houses of mourning, the men and women were sitting totally separate. So that it was difficult for me to get too close to where the mothers were sitting to talk to them one-on-one. I was able to do so briefly. But with us in the delegation from the Orthodox Union was a woman, Mrs. Benovitz, who had an extended conversation with Mrs. Yifrach, Eyal's mother. And she asked her the question, "Where did you get the strength to behave the way you did? To live through those 18 days, such courage, such hope, such faith, and now with such horrible news. And yet, you seem to be a model. Everyone's looking to you for guidance, and spiritual guidance and inspiration. Where did you get the ability to do that?" And Mrs. Yifrach answered with something very, very important that's so true. She said, "That strength, that power is within each of us. Every Jewish person has that faith deep inside of himself or herself. Sometimes it comes out in happy ways, through inspiration, through prayer, through doing good deeds, and that powerhouse, that storage room of faith rises to the surface. Sometimes it takes tragedy to bring out that emunah. It takes tragedy to bring out that faith. But the faith was always inside of me, and now it just came to the surface in response to this tragedy. That's a lesson from one of the mothers, a powerful lesson, simply put, without any flourish, but yet one that is so true for every Jewish person at this point in time. With rockets falling across Israel, a report of a rocket in the Golan Heights a little while ago, some say it's true, not true, in the Galil, Nahariya, south of Israel for sure, Yerushalayim, Tel Aviv, Hebron, Beit Shemesh, on and on, Be'er Sheva. How does one get through it? How does one cope? And what we're seeing so far is the ability to cope through a wellspring of emunah, which we all have. Some of us have used it before for other trials and challenges. Some have never been in touch with it, but it's there now for us to access. That was one point I wanted to make, and that's Mrs. Yifrach. Mrs. Sha'ar, Gilad's mother, had a different response that sunk in to me. She pointed out, she was quoted in the newspapers, but she elaborated on it when we visited with her, that she was so thankful for the way the police, the army, the intelligence services, the offices, the high offices of the government dealt with the families during this entire episode. She said she felt from the beginning, from the Prime Minister on down, President on down, outgoing President, incoming President of Israel, they were there for her and they cared, as she put it in her Ifrit, as much as my own brother and sister. And when we were there, an officer came in the uniform, he was apparently a high-ranking officer, and she turned to the officer and said, turned out that he was the head, the chief coordinator of the search mission, looking for the boys. And he had told the parents, I promise you, we will bring them back. He didn't say we'll bring them back alive. We will bring them back. And she, when this man came into the Shiva house, she turned to him and said, thank you. You promised you would bring them back, and you did bring them back. Thank you. The power of that thank you, the gratitude for bringing back the body of my son, and the depth with which she expressed that gratitude is another tremendous source of strength that we all have in us as we cope with whatever we're coping with the past few days and weeks and might still have to cope with. One is the deep faith of which Mrs. Yifrach spoke, and the other is a deep, powerful sense of gratitude that Mrs. Sha'ar exhibited. Sitting off in a corner was an old Rav, who was the Rav of Mrs. Sha'ar when she was a girl. And he turned to me and said, do you know what that thankfulness is all about? Where it comes from? Sense of gratitude even for something which is far less than one wanted. She wanted obviously to see her son come home and lead the singing around the table. He was the only boy in a family of all of his siblings and sisters. Who's going to lead us in the singing now? We have to learn to sing ourselves, she said. But this old girl said a very remarkable thing. Many of us are aware, some may not be aware, this audience, that when we recite the Birchas HaMazon, after we eat a meal, we recite four brachos. The first three brachos that we recite are min HaTorah, the Torah ordained. The fourth bracha, we call the bracha of HaTov VaHameitiv. We thank God for being good and for doing good. That bracha was instituted by Chazal, by our sages. Why? What were they so grateful about? This beautiful expression of gratitude which we recite, sing after each meal with bread. Gemara says that bracha was instituted for the Haruge Beitar. Beitar is and was a large community in the land of Israel. During the revolt, Bar Kokhba revolt, after the destruction of the Second Temple, that town of Beitar was decimated by the Roman legions. And the people of that town, a large town, the Gemara describes it as a huge population, their corpses were strewn upon the battlefield. They weren't buried. The Romans killed them and let them rot in the sun and let them be food for the vultures and ravens. However, their bodies did not rot, did not decay. Their bodies remained intact. And eventually, they were brought for a proper Jewish burial. So Chazal say, we recite this bracha today, 1900 years after that event. Still, every day when a faithful Jew recites the benching, the Birchas HaMazon, he recites this bracha, HaTov Shelo Hisrichu, HaMeitiv Shenitnu Likfur. Blessed be God because their bodies did not rot, did not decay. Blessed be God that they were intact enough to be brought to a proper Jewish burial. This old Rav sitting in the home in the town of Talmon, the Sha'ar family said, the bodies of these three boys were lying in the sun for 18 days buried under rock. Normally, those bodies would have been unimaginably bad shape. The bodies would have been infested with vermin and snakes and worms and who knows what. But the bodies were intact, and the bodies were brought to Jewish burial, and the burial sites, the grave sites of those three boys will be a place for all of us to visit and to remember and to shed tears until the resurrection of the dead, until Tchiyas HaMeisim. That's not what the mothers were praying for and hoping for. That's a situation that they accepted with gratefulness and gratitude. You promised you'd bring the boys back. You did. Thank you. The second lesson. The third lesson from the woman who, at least as far as the media was concerned, made the most dramatic impact. This is Frankel, who happens to be a public speaker and a gifted teacher before this tragedy. But all during these 2.5 weeks that they were searching for her son Naftali, she spoke to various groups of people and gave them the same message in different words. And the message was, I'm praying with all my heart. It might help. I believe it could help, especially when thousands and millions are praying, and they are. But God doesn't owe me anything. And if tomorrow, God forbid, I'll hear the worst news, I don't want my children to feel, where did all my prayers go? She was already anticipating the fact that many people, children certainly, many adults too, I found this reaction to many people I've spoken to. We prayed, thousands prayed. Where did all those prayers go while these tears shed in vain? Mrs. Frankel saw that this might be the reaction and tried to head it off at the pass and to say from the depth of her pain, God might not listen. God doesn't owe me anything. She put it, God is not my employee. And therefore, no matter what happens, don't be crushed, don't be broken, don't lose faith. He doesn't always do as we wish. Difficult lesson, very mature lesson. But it's a lesson that people of faith, certainly Jews of faith, have learned and internalized for all the years that we've needed to call upon the faith of prayers that seem to us not to have been answered. At some higher level, all prayers are answered. But from our perspective, sometimes they seem not to have been answered, but they've not been uttered in vain, not been shed in vain. These are three lessons from the three mothers. There are other lessons I learned that day that are very, very important at this point in time. Because these three mothers didn't come out of nowhere. These three mothers weren't just born 30 or 35 or 40 years ago. These three mothers had mothers, their mothers had mothers, going all the way back to three other mothers that I want to mention now, who have powerful lessons to teach us. One is a group of women whom we encountered in last week's Torah reading and whom we will encounter again at this coming Shabbos, but next week. We don't know them as mothers from the Torah. We know them as daughters, sisters and daughters. And they are the five daughters of Slavkot. Slavkot had five daughters, Chagla, Bilka, Tirza, etc. And they're mentioned in the Torah. What is their special zechus? What teaching did these, they were mothers, they eventually married and had children, perhaps some people sitting in this room are descendants of theirs. And even if not, they're still our mother figures, mother images. What did they teach us? They taught us the importance of the land of Israel. That's what they were all about. There were girls, they were afraid, had no brothers, they would have no stake in the land of Israel. Only males would inherit the land. And Moshe himself referred their request to God himself, and God said, no, women have a place in Eretz Yisrael too. And he gave them that place. Therefore, as Rashi points out, the Meraglim, the spies, etc., disgraced the land, rejected the land. But these women, and all women of Israel from that point on, have a special connection to the land that women have and men don't have. Chochmas Noshim Bonso Beso, Rambam says, Chochmas Noshim refers to the women, because Bonso Beso, they're the ones who build the house, the homeland, the land of Israel. It's a woman's role in bringing back the Jewish people, the land of Israel. It's very powerful. Some of you know that I have a background in psychology, especially in the psychology of families. And when I visited those three families, this is something I learned long ago in pastoral rabbinics, often, especially when you go to Chas V'Shalom, Lo Aleinu V'Lo Aleichem, to a Shiva house where they're mourning a lost child, where parents are mourning a lost child, people gravitate to the parents. They ignore the siblings. And they also, by the way, ignore the grandparents who aren't really sitting Shiva, halachically, but they're hurting just as much as anyone else. So I learned long ago, and I teach this to the rabbis, young rabbis that I involved in training, make some time to sit with the other siblings who may be adults, who may be little kids. They're also sitting Shiva. And make some time to seek out the grandparents of the person, of the deceased, and spend some time with them too. They're also hurting. So I tried to do that. And when I came to the Yifrach family in the town, actually a large town, Elad, I introduced myself to the father and to the men that were sitting around him, many, many people were there, hundreds of people. And I said in Ivrit that I'm here as a delegate, as a part of a delegation, as a shaliach, on behalf of the Orthodox Union, and we represent Kama Meot Batek Nesiot Biarzot, many hundreds of synagogues in the United States. And he was very moved, visibly moved, thank me for coming. So wonderful that people he doesn't know from across the ocean sent me to express condolences on their behalf, etc. Sitting next to him, but off on the side, was a little 12-year-old boy. He was Eyal's brother. I asked to make 12, maybe a little younger, maybe a little older. And I walked over to him and tried to strike up a conversation with him. And he, after a few words, said to me, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, sure. I couldn't imagine what question he had to ask me. And he said to me, "Yesh kama meot batek nisiot bagola." There are hundreds of synagogues and shuls in the diaspora, in the United States. I mean, this kid was like, ooh. And imagine that. So I shamefacedly said, yes, there are. They all care about you and thinking of you, and I'll bring back your message to them. And he said to me, why? Why don't they come here? Why don't they come here? And I told him I didn't have an answer to that, but I promised him I would bring that message back to at least some of the hundreds of synagogues in the United States. Here's a young boy living in Elat. He can't imagine why everybody else shouldn't be living here too. Very powerful message. It's the message of the daughters of Tzlafa. That's their message. There's only one place for the Jewish people. So much has been spoken about that this brought us all together. We have Achdut, we have unity. Well, we're far from Achdut and unity, let's be frank and candid about it. But we took maybe a step or two toward it, which is also something. But the grandfather of the Sha'ar boy, I spoke to him about the same topic. He said, unity, Achdut, as long as you, meaning me and the people I represented, as long as you stay in Chutz Laaretz, as long as you stay outside the land of Israel, there can be no Achdut, there can be no unity. And he said a pasuk, it's a pasuk which reads, Goy Echad Ba'aretz. We are one nation, only in one place, in Eretz Israel. But in the land of Israel, we can be one. These people, these three families, besides all their other virtues, are committed Zionists in the best sense of the word. They are Ohavei Tzion. They love Eretz Yisrael. They came to Eretz Yisrael from them or their parents from across the world. They are committed to the land. That's their most highest priority in their lives. And that's something that we have to take from them, especially now as rockets are falling all across our land. But that's one mother, or group of mothers, the children of Tzlafa. Then we have another mother who actually calls herself our mother. And that is the prophetess, Devorah. Devorah was a prophetess. And she said, Ad shakamti Devorah, shakamti aim be Yisrael. That the Jewish people needed not a general. She hired the general. She enlisted Barak ben Avinoam. She saw her own role as being the mother who would inspire the Jewish people to go to war in self-defense. And if one reads her shira, her poem, which is the Haftorah of Parshas Beshalach, you see an interesting thing. As mother, what do mothers do best? I don't know about your mother, but I know what my mother was a specialist at. Aleh HaShalom. She was great at making sure that we kids got along together. Her dying words, literally her dying words, Mother Dodge was a very old woman. I was a grown man with grandchildren of my own. Actually, her life overlapped by 3 months with our great-granddaughter. So she lived to see a fifth generation. But when she was in her prime, what she would say, and what she actually said on her deathbed was, and you can hear your mother's, your own mother saying this one way or another, don't forget your sister, don't forget to get along with your brother, your sister might need money, your brother might need a little chizuk, your brothers and sisters stick together as a family. That was the message of my mother and so many other Jewish mothers. That was the message of Devorah as a mother. Why did only some of you come to battle and the rest of you stay out of the war? Why weren't you all here? And she named them by name, which tribes came and which tribes didn't come, which tribes were involved in the effort, military effort, and which ones were not. That's the role of Devorah, a very, very powerful role. She did it in a chiding way, in a critical way, gently critical, but critical. But that's one way to bring about unity. You're not going to confront those elements within the Jewish people who are divisive, for whatever reason, whatever ideology. They have to be confronted, they have to be brought into the central core, into the umbrella. You can't just speak of unity if you're just getting, well, we'll all sit and shed a tear together, fine. But there are so many more profound ways that we have to be united. We have to learn to respect each other in spite of our differences. You know, the principal, dean, the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva, which two of the boys, Naftali and Gilad, learned, studied, Makor Chaim, or Steinsaltz's yeshiva. His name is Rabbi Dov Singer. So at the funeral, at the eulogy he gave at the cemetery, he said an interesting thing. There's a joke which you've all heard, different variations of the joke. Two Jews, three opinions. Shnei Yehudim, Shnei Deyot. So he said, what we learned through this ordeal with the boys is, yes, two Jews, three opinions, but one heart. One heart. That's a profound insight. One heart. But I would go further and say, yes, that was accomplished. At the level of heart and feeling, whose heart did not go out hoping against hope that the boys would be recovered alive, and whose heart did not grieve and is still not grieving about the loss of those three boys. Lev Echad, that's easy. But to somehow bring about that two Jews don't have three opinions, and two Jews don't have two opinions, but two Jews come to the same opinion, we're a long way from that, and that's one of the things we've got to do. And as we see, it's hard to interpret the circumstances and try to find meaning in them. Who knows God's ways? But one of the things we're seeing now, in an extremely powerful way, and you watch the news, you see it again and again. That if there's any Jew anywhere in the land of Israel who thinks it doesn't mean me, the rockets are showing it means you. It means you whether you live in the West, so-called West Bank, the Shomron, or whether you live in Tel Aviv, or whether you live in Be'er Sheva, or whether you live in Nahariya. But what's more frightening and more powerful is, in case you think you're living in Paris and you're exempt from rockets, you know what happened in Paris yesterday? You read the news? There was almost a pogrom there. A group of Arabs surrounded a shul. Jews were getting together on a Sunday, a matzah for Milchama Arab or whatever, and the shul was under siege. The French police had to come in, and they had to disarm the Arabs who were carrying, not rockets in Paris, they didn't have them, but carrying the rockets that were used in the massacres in Hebron in 1929. Axes, kitchen knives, butcher knives, shards of glass, etc., ready to perform a pogrom in Paris, France, in the year 2014. It's a message to Jews everywhere, and Los Angeles, California yesterday. People protested, not protesting, but coming out in support of the Israeli effort, and they were attacked by whomever attacked them in the streets of Los Angeles. If this doesn't bring home the lesson of Goy Echad, that we are one nation and we're all intertwined, then I don't know what can. It's extremely important point to ponder. So that's Devorah. But then we had another mother. And she's the Mama Rochel. Our mother, Rochel Imen. Mrs. Frankel's name happens to be Rachel. But of Rochel, we know it's almost, we know the words so well, it's almost trite to say the words, but they're so powerful, the words of Yirmiyahu. Kol beromo nishma, nehi b'chi samrurim. There's a voice that sounds beromo from a high place, weeping and crying. Rachel avaka el banecha. It's Rachel crying for her children. And God himself tells Rachel, mini kolech mi bechi. Stop crying. Beinayach mi dima. Stop shedding tears. Yesh socha lepul asech. There is a reward. Your tears are heard. Your prayers are heard. And your children are returning slowly, tortuously, with problems, with yisurin that are necessary to conquer and repossess Eretz Yisrael. But they're coming back in all kinds of ways. So there are three mothers here on earth mourning in their communities in Eretz Yisrael, but they trace back to three mothers going all the way back to the times of Rochel, and the Benos Slavkot, and Devorah. I'd like to say something about the current situation. I'm not a general, I'm not a prime minister, and I'm certainly not a prophet. but I can only tell you what I'm feeling throughout this. This is not just another battle. This is not just going to be another ceasefire and then whatever's going to happen in a year or two or a month or two is going to be all over again. There's something happening now that's bigger than all of us. We don't know where it is, what it is, how long it's going to take. But the lo pashut, what's happening now is not simple. It's extremely complex, extremely important. It's a significant point in Jewish history. It's not just another war. It's extremely significant. Hopefully it's the beginning of the very, very last and very short phase before the final redemption. But whatever it is, it's extreme. It's much more than we think it is. It's not a passing couple of rockets here, a couple of rockets there. We'll do what we do. The UN will come in, or Egypt, our great friends will make peace, and everything will be fine. It's not that. That's something more than that. This was brought home to me by a phrase that I saw. I don't know the origin of this phrase, but it's something striking about it. I approached the little courtyard where the Frankels live in Nofel Ayalon. There's a little archway, and above the archway there was a sign with these words. Listen carefully, six words. Am ha-netzach lo mefacheid miderech arukah. Am ha-netzach, the eternal nation, lo mefacheid, is not afraid miderech arukah, from the long road. I've since learned, as I spoke yesterday in Muncie, New York, and someone came over to me, he had just come back from Eretz Yisrael, spent this past Shabbos there, and they made a song out of this, to the tune, is I think it's a Breslov and Niggun, Oz Vahodo Levusho. Some of you may know it, I'm not going to try to sing it here. But they put that tune to these words, Am ha-netzach lo mefachei miderech arukah. But listen to what the words mean. We are an Am ha-netzach. We are an eternal nation. We're in existence 3,700 years plus. And we will be in existence, Netzach Yisroel lo yishaker, will be in existence until the end of time. Unlike all of the nations that confronted us, going back to Amalek and Moab and Midian, etc., right down to Rome and ancient Greece, etc., right down to Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union, etc., etc., we've outlived them all. So we are an Am ha-Netzach. That means that our perspective cannot be the moment. Our perspective has to be eternity. That's our perspective. We hope Yeshua Hashem keheref ayin, in the blink of an eye, everything would be wonderful. But that's not been the Jewish experience. If it is, halavai. If it's not, we are the Am ha-Netzach. This generation, looking especially around the room, Baruch Hashem, there are younger people. It's true of us older people too. The generation that we live is the now generation. It's the electronic generation. You want to know the answer? You know, I see my grandson, he has a term paper that he has to do for his first year in college. When I was first year in college, to do that term paper would have taken me weeks of study in a library. He goes on Google, puts in a few key words, and he's got all the research he needs in an instant. Everything is an instant. You want to find out about a potential employee or a potential shidduch? In an instant, you can find out everything you wanted to know about that person, plus some things you didn't want to know. Certainly some things he or she didn't want you to know. Everything is instantaneous. And the media convey that picture, convey that image. Everything in the films, the drama, the plays, everything, it all happens in an instant. The perspective is extremely short term, extremely short term. The whole notion of development and maturity and working through processes which take months, years, and in the case of history, centuries until they evolve and develop, that's lost. The whole perspective of history is lost in our time. A Jew without history, there's no religion without history. If it's not Zechel Yitzchias Mitzrayim, then it's Zechel Yimei Bereishis. I mean, it's we go all the way back to the beginnings of time, and everything had its roots back in time. Mrs. Frankel and Mrs. Shaar and Mrs. Yifrach go back to the B'dol Slavchot and Tarochel Imenu. It's all one chain, it's all interlocked. We are an Am ha-Netzach. And therefore, if there are frustrations, If the derech arukah, if the road seems long, and not only the road seems long, but the road seems tortuous, ups and downs, twists and turns, ama netzach lo mefachei biderech arukah. The eternal nation is not afraid of the long and challenging road. So many times, I used to think, I gave it to groups that I worked with on Holocaust education. Could you have survived the tests of the Holocaust? The deprivation, the hunger, the pain, the torture, seeing your children butchered in front of you, etc., etc. The fact is that we, at least those of us who grew up in an affluent society, etc., spoiled, entitled, etc., I always wonder, could we have done what our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, could we have survived and come out unscathed in our faith and our emotions the way some of them did, with resilience, etc.? I don't know the answer to that. But I know that we have to develop some of that sense of it's a derech arukah. It's a long, hard road. If Ribono Shel Olam can do be'ito achishenu, he can do it in a moment. And we pray for that. But if he doesn't do it in a moment, the road remains long and tortuous and winding in all sorts of directions that we don't want to go in. The Am HaNetzach is not afraid of that. It's not afraid of that. I'd like to move toward a close. I received a few days before Shabbos a little chuveret, a little monograph, pamphlet from Rabbanei Tzohar, a group of rabbanim, a group of rabbis in the land of Israel, the state of Israel, who have a broader perspective about how to deliver rabbinic services. Some say they're right, some say they're wrong. But in any case, I'm on their mailing list, and they sent me what their suggestions for what rabbis in Israel, rabbis of shuls, rabbis of small communities, should be saying to their people this past Shabbos, rockets are flying, etc., etc. They had some excellent ideas. They had a psychologist write a beautiful article about what needs to be said about trauma, etc. But the writer concludes and says, people come and they ask me, Ma yihye basof? What's going to be the end? What's the end? Where's the end of all this? Where's it all heading? So he writes, that's an easy question. The end will be, as he puts it in Ivrit, tov v'nifla, wonderful. The end will be wonderful. And after all, he says, usually the rabbi's drasha is soon after the brachos that we recite on the Haftorah. And what do we recite in the Haftorah? Not one of the words of the prophets that we read, Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and Yechezkel, Hosea and Amos, etc., etc., not one word will not be fulfilled. The ending will be the way the prophets prophesied it. And the truth is, everyone here, if you've just been to Eretz Yisrael, if you've read about Eretz Yisrael, today's Eretz Yisrael, you see the words of the prophets have come true in an amazing capacity. My favorite prophecy which has come true is the prophecy of the Navi Zechariah. Now, Zechariah says, the time will come, old Yeshu Zekenim Zekenos Bechutzos Yerushalayim, old men and old women will sit in the parks of Yerushalayim with their cane in their hand, and they'll watch children playing. I personally, Baruch Hashem, we have an apartment there in Israel. We hope to return there next week, next Wednesday. And there's a small park right behind our home. I don't have a cane yet, Baruch Hashem, but I qualify as being a zokeh, an old man. And I love to sit in the park and watch the kids play. Partly because a lot of grandparents like to watch kids play, whether their own grandchildren or not. But partly because I actually feel the prophecy of Zechariah is coming alive in front of my eyes, literally. Literally. And that's what the Navi is telling us. That's what the Bracha is telling us. Everyone, that's the end. The problem is, he says, how soon will that end come? What else will we have to go through before that end comes? But the end will be Tov v'Nifla. In the middle of the bombing, there were weddings. We have friends, had a wedding June 8th, last Tuesday night, rockets, et cetera, et cetera. Many, many stories about the weddings. But there's one story about a couple who live in the Tivot. The Tivot is what qualifies as a southern community, so it's under attack, had attacks throughout the years. And they was getting married, their names are Sapir, the woman's name is Sapir, the Kala, the bride. The man's name is Shauli Tevito, is his second name, Tet, Vov, Vov, Yud, Tet, Vov. And as he's preparing for the wedding, the last few hours, he's getting calls, we are stuck, we can't get down Highway 6, it's full of rocks. We are stuck because we can't get out of Ashkelon, Ashdod because of the code red. We are stuck, we can't make it to the wedding, we're all being detoured, there's traffic, etc. Most of his family, including very close members of his family and all of his friends, could not get to the wedding that day in the Tivot. They were wondering what's going to be with the wedding. He writes in his Facebook message, I can give you the address if you want to see it yourself, he says, Ani lo ben yeshiva. I'm not a yeshiva bocher. However, in the Tivot, there are many yeshivot, there's one yeshiva, yeshiva tester, 400 or 500 young men. They all came to the wedding. And they all danced and they all sang and they made my wedding the pinnacle, he writes, the pinnacle of simcha. It was just the most joyous wedding possible. It was just wonderful, it was just beautiful. And in the Facebook message he writes, I want to thank these boys for making my wedding what it could be. It's interesting, he said himself he's not a ben yeshiva. But what these boys were doing by dancing and singing, and he writes, by the way, dancing and singing, and eating and drinking. The boys, eating and drinking. But if you sing and dance and eat and drink at a wedding, Gemara tells us, it's as if you rebuilt one of the ruins of Jerusalem. You know, you don't have to take a, hire an architect and deal with Israeli real estate agents. You could just sing and dance at a wedding and you've rebuilt one of the churbos of Yerushalayim. So that Facebook message went, relatively speaking, it went viral. All over Israel you have his message, the yeshiva bachur came and they made simcha at his wedding. So he sent out another Facebook message. I became famous, I want to thank you so much. And he writes and concludes that second Facebook message with these words. Todah rabah, thank you so much. Mamash margishim, we literally feel, she'anachnu chelek mimishpacha gedola, that we're all part of one family. Hachevra me ha'yeshiva ta'hezder, ve'emet mamash rikshu, they were truly exciting, with a wonderful, wonderful experience. Zuchut lihiyot chelek me'am Yisrael, a special privilege to be part of the Jewish people. Those are the words we have to remember because these are the words that will carry us through whatever is left in this specific episode. On the one hand, Am ha-netzach lo mefached miderech arukah, we are an eternal nation, we're not afraid of the road that lies ahead, whatever lies ahead. But the strength that we have to plod along that long road is she'anachnu chelek mimishpacha gedola, we're part of one family, zechut lihiyot chelek me'am Yisrael. The privilege to be part of this great nation. Calling me for what time? 8:05. So let's say a few kapitel for Hillel, and if someone doesn't mind, maybe someone can send upstairs to the ladies the Mishaberach for the Chayalim. Someone have a Tehillim or over these weeks, we've been saying various chapters of Tehillim. Some are very familiar with to us. There's one chapter which, believe it or not, refers to Hamas. Perhaps we can say that chapter. Give me a moment to find it. Thank you. grandfather. We'll say Kapitel Kuf Chof Aleph 121, and then I'm going to ask, we'll recite the Mishabera for the Chayalim, and then we'll have a minute. If someone give me one of the cards, myself. So, chapter Kuf Chof Aleph 121 in Tehillim. Shila Malos, Esoy Nayel Hehorim, Eayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Meim Adono, Yosei Shomayim Vorets. Anitein Lamot Raglecha, Yonum Shomrecho. Hine Lo Yonum Lo Yishon Shomer Shemesh lo yakeko v'yoreyach baloi lo. Adonai yishmorcho mikol ro yishmor es nafshecho. Adonai yishmor tseischo v'echo meyato v'yadolo. If you have the tefillah, we can recite it together. I'll say it out loud. You can follow along with me. Yishaberach avoseinu avrom yitzo v'yachov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yishmor V'Yatzil Es Chayoleinu Mikol Tzoro V'Tzuko Mikol Nega U'Machlo Yitzlach Berocho V'Hatzlacho V'Chol Ma'aseh Yideihem Yad Beres Oneinu Tachteihem V'Yadrein B'Chese Yeshua U'Vateres Nitzachom V'Yukuyam Bohem HaKosu Ki Adonai Eloheichem Aholech Imochem Lihilochem Lochem V'Moivechem Lehoshia Eschem V'Nomar Amen. I've brought along several hundred of these cards. Please take them, distribute them to others. We're preparing at the OU English translation version as well as the Hebrew original version. And spread them around. The more people who recite this prayer, the better. I want to say a couple of other points in conclusion. I want to thank Rabbi Donald Bixen. I spoke to him several times over the past week. He's away, couldn't be here tonight. Of course, he's fully supportive of our efforts. People ask, besides the spiritual, what else can we do in a practical sense? And there's much that can be done. And there are many organizations locally and across the world who are doing wonderful things, raising funds for all sorts of important projects. Just want to mention one such source. If you go to the OU website, ou.org, and look under what you can do, you'll see various things that you can do, writing letters to our political representatives, etc. But also specific projects that you can donate funds to, one of them being the project that OU has going in Israel in the towns which are currently under heaviest rocket attack. We have people on the ground working in the bunkers, in the safe rooms, etc., especially working with young children. It's a very important project, and of course there's so many other important projects. I have to tell you the importance of Tzedakah at the charity at a time such as this. May our prayers and our thoughts and our sticking together ba'achdut in true unity bring about a very, very short road until we experience the geula shleima b'mehera v'yameinu amen.